Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams. Daniel, good to see you this morning.
How are you this morning, Dr. Paul?
I am doing fine, and let's talk about oil, and let's talk about the almost president, sort of, Hillary. But we've talked about Hillary in the past, mainly, I think, one of her legacies is Libya.
Yeah.
You know, and her statement after Gaddafi was killed. I mean, it was pretty terrible.
Graphic.
And that was a big deal in 2011. It was the progressive Democrats that were orchestrating this.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't the hawkish Republicans at the time, even though they weren't complaining too much. Anyway, that was involved international force. They knew how to do it. They were sort of following George H.W. Bush.
Yeah.
Get a coalition, and they did. They had, I guess the United Nations weren't too interested, but NATO, they did it. We threatened them with withholding our funds, probably. So we went in there in a short period of time with NATO, and various European countries were anxious to do it, too. And they got rid of Gaddafi, and the oil became available directly to the West, but actually, it didn't happen smoothly.
Yeah.
And if you look at this major effort that has gone on to make the world a better place and fight terrorism and give democracy to Libya, none of it has happened. And the best description for Libya right now is chaos and anarchy, with two factions probably fighting, and over in Haftar, you know, has a large faction and has the western part, but not Tripoli, and he's fighting with the UN government in Tripoli, and we're in the middle of it. But I think what caught my attention on this was last week's report of a phone call.
Yeah.
You know, Trump called Haftar and Haftar, and he. You know, I found it fascinating. He thanked him for securing the oil.
Yeah.
So oil definitely was on his mind. And of course, we've been supporting him. And Haftar is known as the CIA man for Libya. And that's been a significant duration. I mean, he's been around a bit. He got trained by the CIA, and he learned for a good many years through osmosis, because isn't it true that he lived there for a while,
close to
the CIA headquarters? Yeah. I wonder what was going on there. Anyway, he went back to Libya, and has been involved, and we're still involved, and obviously we're very interested in that, although the factions are confusing, and Russia's involved, and that confuses things too. But the one thing that isn't confusing, it's very chaotic, and they have anarchy, and they have not given Libya more peace and tranquility. Exactly the opposite has occurred.
And just like in Ukraine, when this great coup at the Maidan was going to cure corruption and improve the living standards of the people, and the opposites happened, the U.S. attack on Libya was supposed to bring democracy, overthrow a dictator who was killing his own people. And, of course, the opposite has happened. And a lot of the war on Libya was driven by pure propaganda, you know, and it's turned out just like in the 1990 U.S. war on Iraq, all lies. Gaddafi was giving out Viagra to his troops so they could rape more women. He was getting ready to attack his own people. Total lies. In fact, Gaddafi at the time said, if you overthrow me, you're going to have ISIS and Al-Qaeda in Libya, which is exactly what happened, exactly what took over. So this is Hillary's great feat, turning Libya, run by a strong man, no question about it, but run stably where people weren't getting murdered, to a place where there's open slave markets, total chaos, factions fighting, in a government in Tripoli, wasn't voted by the people, nope. It was imposed by the UN. The UN said, this guy, he's your president. You got to deal with this. And that's when Haftar, from the east, started the rebellion, started fighting against. And now he's made his way toward Tripoli. He actually did an assault on Tripoli a few days ago, but was repulsed. Interestingly enough, the forces that joined the UN forces to repulse Haftar, some of them are on the U.S. list of terrorist organizations.
Yeah.
So it's a real muddle there.
You know, when Bush was in office and orchestrating war in the Middle East, especially Iraq, Democrats in opposition, the progressives were more like progressives. And I remember the chanting and the organization, because it was a Republican war, and, you know, it's all about oil, it's all about oil. Yeah. And they went on and on. But it is usually about oil. I don't think it's ever for liberty and freedom. It's never for the people either, although that is always the justification, democracy. But, you know, and we... you mentioned so many things there. They lied us into this and lied into this. But I was thinking about our program, on Pompeo. But he's following the rules.
Yeah.
That he's following their definition. This is a well-known thing, you know, that the truth is made by the state. The more authoritarian the state becomes, the more they set what is true or not. So he's definitely following the rules. He does a very good job. Of course, we pointed out, you know, the utter hypocrisy and the ugliness of admitting it. You know, why doesn't he leave us in a little bit of ignorance so that we don't have to be so outraged over that this is official policy? Because so many people responded to that program about the outrage of the crowd.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, this whole system of our foreign policy, they laugh and boo and do all these things anytime somebody tries to speak up. I just hope, you know, in this election coming up, I just hope Tulsi Gabbard gets a little bit of attention, because she really can handle this foreign policy quite well. She sees through all this.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw in Bob Wenzel's Target Liberty, he had a great quote from Gabbard about Iran. Really terrific quote. That's why no one's talking about her, of course.
Yeah.
But, you know, the key issue is the oil, and I think it's so critically important. I don't think you can overstate, and I think that is the whole reason of the call, Trump's call, because U.S. policy, foreign policy, is officially that we favor the U.N. government, we favor the U.N. process. And here Trump comes and calls the other guy and thanks him and praises him and says, you got to secure that oil, keep that oil secure. It's all about Iran, and it's all about the fact that we're in kind of a foreign policy prison of our own making, slavishly devoted to the desires of Saudi Arabia and Israel to go after Iran at all costs. They know in a few days' time, 1 million barrels are going to be off the market. Americans are already feeling the pain at the pump. Trump is desperate to have someone backstop this idiotic policy that's anti-American. It doesn't help us, this anti-Iran policy. And so he's desperate that none of this oil in Libya is going to be taken off the market. He needs it desperately, because the Saudis aren't that crazy about upping the pumping. You know, they're enjoying these high prices.
Yes, and we shouldn't be totally surprised. We talk about the neocons, we talk about the president, but we blame the neocons and always hope that Trump is not a neocon. But if you look at more what he does rather than what he says, because he has said some negative things about the wars going on and didn't like the wars when he was out of office.
Yeah.
And now
he even praised you a few times.
Yeah, now he's on again, off again. But he has been very consistent on his actions. There's no doubt on one thing. We have a job figuring out what does he really think of North Korea, you know, this sort of thing. And even in Syria sometimes it's off and on. But he has been adamant from the first week or first month at least that he was in office. Where did he go? He went to Saudi Arabia, he went to Israel, and he has consistently taken the position of being almost fanatically opposed to Iran.
Yeah.
Now, there's no reason for anybody to be trapped into saying, well, Iran is a great country and, you know, they do no wrong, but what country does wrong? But it's something that he's been consistent on, so we shouldn't be surprised that it's about oil, and it's about Iran, and it's about control of this, and it's about Saudi Arabia, and it's about Israel. So that fits into his scenario. It's interesting that this is sort of like the neocons, but the neocons pretend at least or act like they hate Trump's guts. Maybe it's just
some do. Yeah.
Maybe it's just their idea of not want. There's some that might agree, but they can't stand his personality. They don't want him to have a political success. So personalities can get involved as well.
Well, you know, Lenin said, "To control the opposition, be the opposition." So, but you know, here's the real irony in this phone call. after 8 years of misery in Libya after our liberation, the call, Trump's call to Haftar indicates that the U.S. wants a strong man in control of Libya with whom we could do business. In other words, the U.S. wants Gaddafi in charge of Libya over again after all this. Talk about the absurdity and the horrible cruelty of U.S. interventionism, that after all this misery, we decide, oh, yeah, we should have kept that guy in.
Well, that fits our theory that they're totally incapable of learning anything from their mistakes. And sometimes they just twist it around and say, oh, yeah, we really wanted that to happen because now we can do this. But somebody ought to call them to task on it. But I think really the biggest shortcoming that we have is we don't have enough Glenn Greenwalds, you know, to tell the truth. And how about the few that have been around? And when somebody finally says, let's straighten this out, we treat them as the enemy of the universe. Yeah. And then we have an Assange, you know, we have to string them up because, gosh, we can't let them know the truth about it. And that's an ongoing process. So let's hope that people wake up and say that I'm stringing up and killing Assange one way or the other. You know, they could kill him without executing him, you know.
Yeah, they're doing a good job.
And when you looked at the condition that he left that prison cell, you know, in that embassy, that's what they do. They may kill Assange, but their real goal is to kill the truth.
Kill the truth,
and that, of course, is... what we feel responsible for is trying to present the truth the best way we can.
Exactly. And when you look at the how the support lines up for Haftar's Libyan National Army and the UN government-backed group in Tripoli, it really looks like a dog's breakfast, the whole thing, because on Haftar's side you have France, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, now the U.S., and Russia. On the UN government side in Tripoli, Italy, U.K., U.S., Turkey, and Qatar. It's a crazy, crazy situation where the U.S. and Russia find themselves on the same side, which is pretty rare. They say, why would Putin support Haftar? I think a good answer is that he's strong. He's strong enough to take it over, which is what the Russians want, stability. And he's not an Islamist. And that's important, I think, to Russia as well. But Italy and France are battling it out for just the venal reasons of wanting the oil. As soon as we overthrew Gaddafi, France was in there trying to grab the oil. Italy wants its share. So does the UK. So it really is kind of a miserable, petty scrambling for oil at the cost of a lot of lives.
Well, I don't expect too much from them because they're sort of wimpish in defending their desires to buy oil from Iran. You know, that might be much better, of course. But no, it's a vicious world out there, and oil does play a part. And there are a lot of other factors, especially as you just described. There is a big mixture. It's not so neat as it was in the old Cold War. You know, you had the Soviets against the U.S. and in 89 and 90, when the Soviet system disappeared, you know, I had high hopes, much higher hopes than it deserved, because I figured, you know, we're a peaceful nation, aren't we? You know, aren't we going to move in that direction? And where's the peace dividend come? Well, we're going to save money from the military-industrial complex. Yeah. We won't need to police the world. And yet it was expanded. It was expanded. The excuse was we have to take over. We can't allow a vacuum out there because people just don't know how to take care of their own country. Sort of the same argument about what progressives do and liberals do here in this country. The people don't know how to take care of themselves. They wouldn't know how to get medical care. They
Without
wouldn't
us.
Know how to get a job. And they wouldn't if we just allowed people to be, you know, left alone. So it's the same philosophy of this authoritarianism that is the disease in all areas. And, of course, then they have to back all that up with violence. That's the problem. You might have a say, yeah, you should have government doing this. Everything you concede to the government ought to be doing this means you're giving them the guns.
Yeah.
And guess what? They don't want us to have the guns. Mm-hmm. And you can hear it now endlessly. Take away all the guns. The guns belong in the government. And we need more bureaucrats carrying guns and to make people happy and prosperous and free medical care. You know, all that nonsense.
Yeah, absolutely. And you go back to Haftar, you know, his timeline is fascinating because I think it dovetails with a lot of people that the U.S. and the CIA love to use to do their bidding. First of all, in 69, he took part in the coup that brought Gaddafi into power as a military man. And then in 87, he launched a U.S.-backed military group. The aim was to overthrow Gaddafi. That was 87. And in 90, the CIA brought him over with 300 of his troops as refugees from Libya. And they lived there, cooling their heels from 90 until 96, when he returned to Libya to stage a coup against Gaddafi. And that failed. So he came back and he moved to Northern Virginia, not too far from Langley, where his buddies were. Again, cooled his heels until 2011, and now is back in there on the verge of taking over the country.
Yeah, I think he has a ways to go because I think anarchy doesn't go away easily. And United Nations and NATO can't be helpful in getting rid of anarchy. They create it. And our type of foreign policy helps create anarchy and chaos as well. Some have said, from the libertarian viewpoint, that there's only been one war that you could fairly well say that the people ended up with more liberty, and that was our American Revolution. Mm-hmm. Because the most of the time, all these efforts, especially when they become international, or these fights are for territory and all these things, the people end up with a lot less liberties. And yet the young people are conned into going over there and fighting these battles. This to me is so amazing. A bunch of old people, white and black, or whatever color they are, they're all for these wars, and they're not for fighting them, but they send these kids over who are being patriotic. That's this part that is disgusting.
Terrible.
And people have to have a better understanding of just what liberty is all about. Hopefully we can contribute a little bit to that.
I hope so. Well, you know, like a lot of people, and I'm dreading what I have to do after the show. I got to go to the gas station to fill up my car. And I'm dreading it because it's going to cost me a lot of money, a lot more than it did a few weeks ago. A lot of Americans are feeling the same way. Out in California, $5 a gallon, it's going to get worse. What's happening here? Well, the Saudis are sitting back and they're enjoying this windfall. The price of oil has gone sky high. They're making tons of money. What are they going to do with that money? Well, they're going to spend a lot of that money on weapons. And what does that money do? It enriches the well-connected people in the Beltway, the Beltway bandits, the people that work for the military-industrial complex. They are getting rich at our expense. We're paying at the pump to enrich the Saudis, who in turn enrich the well-connected people in Washington. That's why U.S. foreign policy is a big ripoff. And that's why we need to oppose this interventionism. Dr. Paul?
Very good. And I think you've made a very strong point there. I want to add, though, the other concern that helps push the oil prices up is the concern about the Straits of Hormuz. Because, if ships aren't allowed to go out Iran decides, well, we're not going to let anybody go out and this sort of thing, and they close the Straits of Hormuz, that is going to really push things even worse. I think there's a little bit of that. It's hard for me to believe they'll actually close it, but that is dangerous. You know, if there was a military effort to close ships from traveling through there, and whether Iran does it or not, or whether there's a false flag, believe me, that will give the Boltons and the Pompeos of the world the reason to go in and make the invasion and start bombing the living daylights out of Iran. So that is a great danger, but that is on there. So in some ways, the other day we talked a little bit about the similarities of the 70s with the embargoes for different reasons, but it took oil prices that were at a settled level for many years, to be in the 70s, it was $3 a barrel. By the end of the 70s, it was $40 a barrel. So that it is in that situation again that it could skyrocket if this gets out of control. And I tell you what, they're capable of messing it up because the unintended consequences and also the false flags and also the intended evil consequences of some people could very well break this loose. If this is the case, it could be that precipitating events that people will realize that they just can't come to the United States and say, we need you to rescue us, and we know what you have done in the past. We did it in 2009, and it has given us a little bit of a chance to get our house in order. Just print more money, print more money. But there will be an event. It could be this but it's not going to happen tomorrow or next week. But it's very vulnerable, and the 70s were very rough. But if this thing gets out of control and the dollar has to adjust to its real value, believe me, the whole world is going to know about that. That is why we work very hard in trying to present the case for peace and prosperity, and it's not too difficult on figuring out what we need. We just need a lot less government and a lot more understanding and determination to defend personal liberty. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today. Please come back soon.